Hello, Mr. Collin.
Hey, Jeff. How you doing? Norm actually texted me to open the room, but
I just got back. I emailed Norm that I would open it.
That's great, because I have not been on Clubhouse for about 5 days. Yeah. Welcome, everyone. Welcome. We are about to kick off with an incredible session today. We have Norm Farrar, who runs this weekly session every week for 1 hour on Thursdays at 1 o'clock Eastern. And I can tell you, like, Jeff and I are involved in a number of e-commerce companies, and we have learned so much over the last, what, 7 episodes, Norm? It's been incredible. We have a podcaster, we have a genius, we have an e-commerce expert, we have an e-commerce entrepreneur. He's been doing it for as long as I know. No, I've known him about 25 years. Norm, over to you.
I'm red. I'm really red. My head's about to explode, especially when we have the people that are going to be on our panel today. And I already see Marsha Reese up here, Andrea Lake. This is going to be a really great session. We're going to be talking about something a little bit different. We're going to talk about scaling. We've touched on it before, but the people that I have on the panel today know how to scale their business. I'll give you an example. Andrea Lake, I mean, Andrew, you can get right into this, but between her and her partners, have had over $1 billion in sales with t-shirts. And this is a rinse and repeat. This isn't a first time for her. She's involved with all sorts of different things. Marsha Reese has been involved with scaling all sorts of different companies, from inventing sidewalk chalk to bringing the Power Ranger license and having over $1 billion in sales with Power Rangers. And we hopefully, Michelle will be able to come on. Michelle and Colin and Jeff are part of Dot Club, and they just had an incredible, well, not exit, but they've just sold to GoDaddy. And there's a couple of other guests that are hopefully will show up as well. So I think before we do anything, Jeff always does this, but I'm starting to get the knack of it. This room is being recorded. So if you don't want to be recorded, let us know before you say anything, and we'll make sure that we stop. And
Norm, let me just say, to make it easier, if you come up on stage, you're giving us permission to record you. If you don't want to be recorded, please don't raise your hand. Please don't come up on stage and participate.
That's why you do this, Jeff. He's so smooth. Anyway, yes. This will be about scaling. I can't wait. Oh, there's Ashley. So we'll start talking with Ashley as well. Ashley Armstrong, you may know her from The View. Got a lot of great entrepreneurs on stage today. So if you like what you hear, hit the green house at Startup Club. If you like the details that you're hearing from the people today, make sure that you follow them so you can get more information. And now let's just start it off. Andrea, how are you?
I am doing so great. I'm coming from Sedona, Arizona today. It's beautiful. Oh. The smoke is finally clearing from the fires, and all is well in my world.
Oh, that's fantastic. And Marsha, how about you?
Well, I am doing great. I'm coming to you from Scottsdale, Arizona. Andrea, we need to hook up. And I may be 1 week away from getting out of the Amazon prison. So keep your fingers crossed.
Oh, I do have my fingers crossed for you. And another reason why I love Marsha so much is her husband is in the Hockey Hall of Fame. So that's a bonus. All right, Ashley, how's it going?
Hey, everybody. It's going. It's an awesome sunny day in Vancouver, Canada. So really, I can't complain. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, you're very welcome. And Miss Brenda.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for having me. And Marsha, I'm also here from Phoenix, Arizona. So I think we're taking over the stage.
Now, Brenda was one of the co-founders of Snow. So Snow, I think that was an exit of about $100 million, wasn't it, Brenda? Something around there?
Yes, its revenues up to that. And I helped start it from the very, very beginning. And it's been a journey. And I recently stepped down January of 2020 to consult other startups.
Fantastic. All right. So let's get into this. And I guess, Andrea, you've become an expert at this whole Clubhouse, you know, system and structure right now. But what are you doing? What have you done? Like, what are some of the secrets to your success of scaling a company?
Well, I do love the rules of, like, don't let your business get bigger than your business. So I always make money first. That's the first top priority. I literally figure out. I've started 14 companies. And Marcia, I'm so excited to have another licensor on here. I owned a distribution company that owned the exclusive sales rights on the merchandise for Minecraft, World of Warcraft, Call of Duty, Walking Dead. But where we started out was just selling t-shirts. And I started a brand called Anti-Establishment Clothing, and the way that we scaled it was just so grassroots. Hit every single store with a catalog, follow it up with a phone call, get a website up, get the sales cranking there, and just be super, super, super consistent with posting to social, with doing cold calls, with chatting with the people who are actually going to be placing orders, larger orders into stores, and that really is what helped us scale.
I just got to find the mute button. There we go. Marcia, what about you? What are some of your secrets to bringing all of your different products? Like you've had Sidewalk Chalk, Power Rangers. You've got involved with the gel pads for keyboards. What are your secrets to scaling?
My secrets are to find a problem, and then I have the ability, thankfully, to create a simple, affordable solution. And I actually started this back in the late 1970s. So I'm the dinosaur of the group. I started selling Walmart when they had 66 stores. And I became a friend of Sam Walton's. He mentored me and taught me so much. And actually, we grew our Sidewalk Chalk globally. And the reason that I got involved with Power Rangers is the company that manufactured those was Bandai. And they had never had a successful product in the U.S. They had been an OEM manufacturer for all the big toy companies. So they bought my chalk company because we sold to everyone and they wanted my distribution system. And I then put the team into place to bring Power Rangers into that distribution system. And I do want to offer to your listeners, the gal that was my VP of sales is a tremendous human being. And she has a nationwide marketing rep business that takes product into brick and mortar. So for those of you who want to go beyond e-commerce, I'd love to link you with her. She is as fine a human being as you'll ever, ever get to partner with. And she is also now working with us on Staywell Copper. So my secret has been finding simple, affordable solutions, but also using the people to help grow your network and never, never, never forgetting the power of thank you. It will get you miles and miles.
You know, one thing I can tell you about everybody that's on this panel right now, and I see this when I walk into Colin's office, it really is the give to get. Give to get gets you everything. It's totally unselfish, but selfish, you know, just contradicting myself. But Marcia, I mean, everything that you're talking about, like just introducing this person to help anybody that's out there. And by the way, this is a no pitch podcast or room, whatever you want to call it. I just want to make that clear. What we're trying to provide here is strictly information to help e-commerce sellers expand their brands. All right, Miss Ashley.
I wanted to thank Marcia really quick, though, because she introduced us to Roberta last week, and we have a call, it's either this week or next, set up with her, Marcia. So thank you for that.
You know, Paul, I just talked to her today, and I'm not pitching her. I get nothing for what she does. She's just a tremendous person. And Norm, I want to say I am so pee my pants excited to get to meet you in person next month. Paul told me that about Prosper. I didn't know about it. And then I thought, don't tell him I'm going to go because I want to surprise Norm if he shows up. And now I found out you are. I am so excited to meet both of you in person.
I can't wait to go there. So if anybody else listening is going to Prosper in Vegas in July, just let us know. DM us. We'd love to meet you. We are going to have a hangout there too. So, Yash, we're going to get to the questions in a second. I just want to just go through a couple more people here. Miss Ashley, how are you?
I am awesome. And I'm like, what was the question again?
We're going to talk about some secrets. And then we're going to talk to some about successes and failures. But right now it's, what are some things that you do to constantly scale and repeat success?
Honestly, I've pivoted quite a bit in the last decade from product development and selling and then consulting and course creation and software tools and the whole nine yards. And really, at the end of the day, the most fundamental, foundational, most important aspect that I know 100% that has helped me in all of those areas is relationship building and partnerships and mentorship. And, Marsha, she already said it, your business moves at the speed of relationships. And when you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. And when you have a goal, definitely go out there, find someone who's been there and done that and pay to be next to them. Get the mentorship, connect yourself with like-minded individuals who are going through the same trials and tribulations and successes and just really grow and being open and honest and vulnerable in your journey and ask for help.
All right. I love it. Brenda, first of all, I always tell you this. I love snow. I love that product. I love how you developed it. But anyways, let's talk about some.
Yes. So I really do agree with everybody on the stage of bring it back to the simple things, the big secrets that we all want to talk about. It's going back to the fundamentals. So I would say, one of the quote-unquote biggest secrets that I think brought a lot of success to when building snow is just bringing the convenience to the customer, adding a lot of value, and enhancing the customer experience. So my biggest focus when I was there is just delivering that amazing customer experience to the direct-to-consumer, and organically just they share it, they love it, they stay loyal. So I would really focus on the consumer.
Paul, how about you with your swim diaper line?
Yeah, I mean, you got to be customer obsessed. I mean, I think that's a common thread that people are saying here is that you know, because in the end, like, you are in business because they are buying your products, and they're, you have to think through, like Marcia said, like, how are you going to best solve their problems? How are you going to not just solve their problems, like, as effectively as you are now, but how are you going to continue to innovate and continue to be the best problem, like, solution to whatever problem you're solving that your competitors could solve? So there's that. But then, like, for us right now, we're going through, I mean, there's always something in business that will cause you to either pivot or just stress you out and you're not expecting it. And it doesn't matter how much planning you do. You know, you can get everything. You're only in control of yourself. And so I think for the people for us anyway, that have been, we've had a lot of those times where it's just like, you got to figure out, something happens with supply chain and then you just got to figure it out. So it's listening to your customers, but then also when you have, like, being prepared for the unprepared and, just understanding that it is what it is. And there will be things that happen that are completely beyond your control. And when those things happen, you have to be able to have the mental fortitude and, I guess, the intestinal fortitude to just get through them and not allow those things to suck all of your energy to the point where you're just demoralized and you don't want to go, whatever. That's where having a team is super important, making sure to rely on, your team members to get through hard times. So, listening to customers and then successfully pivoting, I think are my two.
All right. Thanks, Paul. Hey, Yash, we're going to get to your question in just a couple of seconds. I just got a question to the panel. Oh, Colin,
I'm fascinated by this topic, Norm. I actually feel like you're pulling off a coup because
every Friday at 2 o'clock, we have what's called the Serial Entrepreneur Hour. And we're trying to crack the code. We're trying to figure it out what it is that these serial entrepreneurs do over and over and over again. And Andrea, Marcia, Ashley, and Brenda, you know, would love to see you at that session. You could you have a lot to contribute. I will say that when I look at a new business, I actually begin the process of thinking about how I can scale that business before I even pick the idea. And there are two characteristics of companies that I look for, either investing in or starting. And those are, can it scale? And can I create a moat, or can I defend that company as it scales? And it's worked out very well for me as I've gone through a number of different companies. Obviously, when I first started, I had no idea what I was doing. But over time, I began to see a pattern develop and began to understand that you can actually develop systems and predict and come up with ideas that help you scale your company faster. And it starts with the idea at the beginning. It takes just as much hard work to build a small business as it does a large business. I truly believe that. My wife and I own a school, and it's incredibly hard for us to scale that school beyond the capacity of that existing school. It's very hard to scale. It requires a lot of infrastructure, a lot of funding. With Dot Club, the company you mentioned earlier, which we sold to GoDaddy Registry, that company was all about selling domain names. It was a company that sold domain names that were alternates to .com, .net, .org. So we could sell a million of them. In fact, we did sell a million, I think 1.2 million names we've gotten up to right now. And that was very scalable. And so I'm attracted to those kind of businesses when I look at new businesses and new opportunities. And I urge those who are going into business just to think about scalability as part of the process of choosing that idea. Colin, complete.
Hey, Colin, I've gone to conferences where you've been speaking on this subject, and you've got 5 stages, basically, of scaling a company. Do you want to touch on that for a sec?
Yeah, I mean, if you really want to map it out, I actually did a discussion at MIT once on this, and it took me about 6 hours. But really, it's 4 areas. People, money, story, and systems. If you could take those 4 things and apply it to start, scale, exit, and repeats, so almost like a graph, a quadrant here, not a graph, a quadrant, where you could see on one side, start, and then with respect to start, what kind of people do I need to start my business? And what kind of money do I need to get this business off the ground? What's my idea? What's my story? What makes me unique? What gives me an X factor or something unique that can help me drive scalability that my competitors don't have? And then lastly, what are the systems? And it would literally take me hours to go through it. But if you could really think of your company in terms of the start phase and people, money, story, systems, and then you move to the scale phase, and then you think about people, money, story, and systems. And with respect to the scale phase, with respect to people, you're looking at people who can lead others. When you're in the startup phase, you are the leader, like you are it. When you're in the scale phase, it's all about hiring great people around you so they can build the company and you can continue to accelerate the growth. So that sort of gives you a high level idea. Hope that covers it, Norm. Colin, complete.
Thanks, Colin. And Jeff, you have something to say?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Norm. And thanks, everyone, for what you said. I really enjoyed listening to Andrea and Marcia and Ashley and Brenda and Paul, as always. And I like that everyone talked about, you know, building your brand and building your business as a relationship. And when you think of it in terms of relationships, you know, the things that you would do to establish a good relationship with a person are also the things that you should do when establishing a relationship for your business or for your products, especially in e-commerce. When you think about it, first impressions matter. You know, when you're meeting someone for the first time, what do you try to do? You might wear, you know, a nicer outfit than you normally wear, or make sure your hair is combed or whatever. You want to look your best. You want to make a great first impression. And that's true with your products and your brand as well. So think about what's going to be your first touch point with a potential customer. It might be an advertisement. So what do your ads look like? What is the message they're sending? You know, this is why packaging is so important. And Norm, you talk a lot about the impact you can have on an e-commerce product just by thinking about the packaging a little bit differently, the unboxing experience. You know, what are those first impressions you're going to make? And all of those customer touch points matter. So that's one way that's I think is really important. Think of a relationship as the way you're building your brand and your business, you know, living up to your word. If you want to establish a good relationship with someone, you want to keep your word with them. Well, you want to keep your word to your customers. You don't want to puff up and make claims that when they get your product, they're going to realize, oh, those were just marketing claims. It's not really true. You want to live up to your word. You want to make a good first impression. You want to think about it the way you would think about building any good, strong, solid relationship. I'm Jeffrey and I'm done.
Thanks, Jeffrey. You know what's something else I got to point out here, which is kind of crazy? I know everybody here that's on the panel, and you're not just focusing on one thing. So I know, Colin, multiple companies, multiple successful companies that you're running right now at the same time. Andrea, you have 14 companies.
Well, I started 14 companies. I'm not currently actually running 14 companies in tandem.
Well, you are running multiple.
I am.
Companies or just all sorts of different things. Mm-hmm. How do you do this? How do you keep everything straight? Is it just people?
Do you know what? And somebody touched on this before. It really is about just hiring amazing people. And I took my hiring practices. This will help anyone scale from the United States Marine Corps, where I set the expectations so incredibly high, and I give a speech to every person during the hiring process, and I mean it, and a lot of people drop out once I say it, which is, I don't expect you to be good. I don't expect you to be great. I expect you to be extraordinary and to make yourself irreplaceable to me, because I run too far and too fast to turn backwards all that often. So I expect you to do your absolute best, and if you do, we are going to ride the best ride together. But if not, you will not be surprised and you will not know it's coming, but you won't last on my team if you're not ready to be the very best version of yourself that you have to offer. And then, of course, I offer all sorts of stuff to help people along with that journey. But it really is about the team that you have in. And all of us, I think, have had businesses where we've put the wrong team together and the business will just fail. And it doesn't matter how good the idea is. It doesn't matter how talented the individual team members are. If they're not properly being led, and if they don't have those expectations of being extraordinary and irreplaceable to you, it just is not going to work out. But if you get everything sort of in place, a lot of my stuff is press and play. I've owned a company called Sticker Junkie for over 20 years. Like, I'm going there next week for 3 days, but it's the first time in over a year I've even been to the offices, because it doesn't require my daily attention. So I do like to set up companies that then create recurring revenue. Most of my time, frankly, I spend trading crypto, so I don't even actually work in my businesses all that often, but it's just about that initial 18-month to 2-year startup time.
Awesome. I love being surrounded by incredibly smart people. Anyways, let's get into a couple of questions, and then we'll get back to a few more questions from me. Yash, welcome to the stage. What's your question?
Yeah, happy to be here. So the question is, in the initial stage of any small or large business, Andrea, I'm told about getting the right team. So I am currently running a shoe business, and I'm at an initial stage. Just started, and I'm having a revenue of 1 million or so. But then in the team, I only have 4 to 5 people who are working, and others are just they are giving their 10 to 20%. So what are the ways we can motivate those people to give their 100% to scale business to the other level?
Well, let's open up that to the panel. What are some ways that you can incentivize people?
Yeah, I'll start off with, when you're starting a business, it's very different than when you're scaling a business. And you don't have a lot of money. And that's a fact, right? But really, selling your vision is absolutely key. if the people around you can understand and see your vision and see what you're trying to create and recognize that there's a piece of that for them down the road, then that can be very compelling. You can often hire great talent into a startup because they've done the big corporate work. They've done, you know, they've made the money and they've done the corporate work and they know they can go get 200 grand working for another corporation. But they also understand that a startup can be a lot more exciting, and the right startup could also be more, could actually make the employee more money because they get a piece of it. I often say, pay your people with love, not money. Don't get me wrong. Everybody needs some money. But then also back that up with options or some stock ownership or some profit sharing as well. So that if the company performs and you actually build some wealth as an entrepreneur, you share that with all the people around you. Call and complete.
Any of our other?
Yes, I would like to comment on that also. When I started my sidewalk chalk company, I didn't have a lot of money either. And we were growing so fast, money became a very precious commodity. But I employed a lot of moms that made our chalk. And one of the things I did, I was a toy company. I made product for kids. So I gave the moms their children's birthdays off with pay because I think a mom should be at home with their child on their birthday. My accountant said to me that I was nuts because a lot of my mothers, the majority of them were Hispanic and they had a lot of kids. But I thought that that was an important benefit and they all loved it. The other thing I would do is I would pit my night crew against my day crew, and whoever did the best production numbers at the end of the month would get free manicures. And they loved that because these were working women. They didn't get to treat themselves to manicures. It didn't cost me a lot, but it built a ton of loyalty. And the final thing, for Mother's Day, I would give them all of their windows washed in their homes. Because, you know, we're working moms and we want our homes to be clean. And having their windows washed gave them a great boost feeling. So it was simple little things that I found that would have meaning for them. And it showed them, I understood what it was to be a working mom. And I wanted to honor them for giving their time away from their kids to my company. Marcia, complete.
Go ahead, Paul.
I mean, some of the things that, I mean, I'd like to say is like, working with people to figure out their strengths. You know, one of the things that we've started doing is having our people take different strengths, like the Colby test is one of the ones we've had our people take. And it basically helps identify areas where, like, any potential job, like positions where they would excel. And, you know, people get energy differently from different tasks. Like, for me personally, I don't really like sitting down and documenting a plan line item by line item and like writing out proposals and stuff. Like, I hate that. I'd much rather, you know, be talking to people, be, you know, having a sales call or something along those lines. So making sure that you have the right people doing the right jobs based on not just their strengths, but their actual, you know, unique individual personalities, like the things that they innately do and do well. Has been huge, because when you have somebody in the right position and they're doing the things that come naturally to them, then it's easier for them to excel. And it's easier for them to come up with creative solutions in their specific area of focus than it would be for, you know, for you. And so first would be identifying, you know, making sure that the right person's doing the right job, and then making sure that you set up, you know, ways to reward people so that when they come up with creative solutions or do something, add more value than, you know, like going above and beyond what they're, you know, technically paid to do, making sure that you provide ways to recognize that. And I love what Marcia said about, you know, providing, you know, like the time off and that sort of thing. Like, it's just the little things that count. Like, you know, doesn't matter, you know, somebody has 6 or 7 kids, that's 6 or 7 days a week that, you know, you're paying, I don't know, maybe their salary is, I don't know, $100 a day. So you're paying $700 to make somebody ecstatically happy with their position and their work atmosphere, which will then obviously increase their productivity. And I mean, you know, for those of us that are, you know, starting and scaling businesses, half of the challenge, in, well, sometimes more than half of the challenge is training. And, you know, you acquire, you know, getting people on and making sure that they're a good fit with the company culture. And there's nothing worse than, you know, investing so much time and a ton of energy in, into somebody and then them leaving, you know, because maybe you didn't treat them with enough respect, or they got, you know, shiny object syndrome and they felt like another company would treat them better or give them something more. So going, my two things would be making sure that the right people are doing the right jobs, you know, backing that up with personality profile tests, that sort of stuff. And then, you know, rewarding and giving them the freedom to fail and to experiment and to grow in their own, in their positions. And I'm Paul, I'm done speaking.
Thanks, Paul. All right, let's talk to Al. Welcome to stage, Al, what's your question?
Hey, thank you everyone, nice meeting you. My question is very simple. Is pricing an important decision-making aspect for any business? Like for a product you sell or a service you offer, how important is pricing it? Like, you know, anything, whatever you sell or like, you know, what are the services you offer? How important is pricing for the business? And if it is very important, how is there any methodology to calculate it? Or how did you guys figure out that this is the best numbers for your business?
I can take that one. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Norm.
Go ahead, Andrea.
Well, I mean, there's loads of different metrics depending on what type of company that you have that are usually available for the general price. But then you have to consider what your audience is. So if you're going after a super luxury audience and you actually price the product too low, they think that it doesn't have any value to it. So it truly, truly depends on like what type of a company you have, what type of the pricing that you're doing. But in general, I personally find the marketing, the look and feel, all of the stuff is more important when I'm not going after a particularly price sensitive customer. But if you're going after like a mass customer, like when I was selling a lot of merchandise to Hot Topic, that's a really mass customer. And so we would just go with the cheapest thing available and we would have to have our pricing accordingly low. So it depends. What type of company do you have?
It is a IT company. It's a software business, actually.
I would actually imagine that in general for software companies, although there's tons of metrics and analysis that have been done on like if it's a SaaS company, what you should charge per month. But depending on if you're going B2B or B2C or whatever, people, if you price too cheaply, people are not going to associate value with what it is that you're offering. So it sort of just depends on where you're going. But if you're going B2B and you have a slightly higher, more expensive price point, then usually they're going to think that your product is better.
Got it.
Yeah, great answer. I love perceived value. I'm going to give you an example, Al. Paul's million times, but we were bringing out a knife, a chef's knife, and it was the landed cost was $16. It launched at $49. We changed the packaging from a clamshell packaging to just a nicer package. We were able to take it from $49 up to $99, up to $124. Then we put it into a wood package, and then it had an outer box similar to an iPhone box. That same knife, one is selling between $99 and $124. The new product is selling for $224, and it's the same $16 knife. So that's what you can do with perception and packaging. Doesn't have the product is one thing. It's got to be a good product, and everything about it's got to be good. But that's definitely how you can package. Now about scaling, I've got a question for the panel. Have you ever heard of providing dynamic equity? I read a book called Slicing Pie years ago and started a company by just providing dynamic equity to any of the, I couldn't afford anybody. And what I needed to do was bring on an expert team. Like Andrea was saying, I didn't have the money to do it. So what I did is I basically came up and I said, all right, look, I'm going to assign a value to your hourly service. And you're going to keep track of it. And at the end of it, I'm going to evaluate the company. and you'll get a piece of equity based on what you've got. So I could bring in all the top people that I could not afford and yet get them to help build the company. Have you guys ever heard of anything like that? It's a great book, by the way, and it's a really short read.
I actually did a crazy equity split that's sort of similar. It's like a slightly different concept where I really wanted a top tier team. And I didn't want to put any money into the starting of the company simultaneously. So I divided equity this way based on indicator markers of sales within a short period of time. So if we hit like, you know, 3 million within a year, then you get this much. But if we hit 9 million within a year, you get like three times as much equity. And as a result, everybody was like super incentivized because we were giving away so much of the company to this team.
Very good. Now, Ashley, Brenda, I have not heard a lot from you today, and I know you have a lot to say about scaling. Would you like anything to add?
Yeah, I'll add to that a little twist to that, the equity split. We did that with celebrities. So instead of paying per post or per this, and it got really expensive, we brought on a couple celebrities to say, hey, if you really believe in the product, and it makes total sense. A lot of male celebrities use mouth guards for football, for boxing, whatever that is. And they love the product. They love the company, the people, the entrepreneurs in there. And we gave them some equity, and now they really push that. They push our company on their own. So that's a little equity split with celebrities.
Didn't you guys honor McGregor?
It was Floyd Mayweather, Chuck Liddell, and Gronk from the. From now, not the New England Patriots, but the Florida one.
Right. Yes. What were you saying?
I had a question on equity. So correct me if I'm wrong, but giving somebody equity, they're then also legally liable for any loss that the company may have. And so oftentimes I've heard that people will give stock options instead of equity. Is there a difference there? Again, you know, I'm good at like starting and failing businesses. I've done that a ton. I have a few like that I run now that are successful, but I haven't done anything with like the equity split. I mean, that was the one conversation we had with our lawyer. We brought on a fractional CMO, and we wanted to give her 5% equity in the company. And basically he was asking, okay, what's the purpose in this? And I said, well, you know, we want to reward her so that, you know, we can't afford to pay her what she's worth right now, essentially. We want to reward her on exit, that when we exit the company, that she's going to get 5% of the sale price. And so basically what he wrote up a contract that she gets that she has the option to get 5% on exit. And so she doesn't actually have equity. And that's just, again, I might be butchering this, but I don't know if there's any difference between stock options, equity, or anything like that.
Yeah, I will add, I'm not a lawyer, but I will add from an entrepreneur's perspective, I've thought about this a lot. And, you know, I really do want to find ways to get equity in the hands of my employees or partners, for that matter. But the major issue is this. If you gift equity, you have to come up with a fair market value for that equity and charge taxes as if that was cash. And if the company were to fail, that employee could end up paying taxes on equity they received, and yet the company did not succeed. So you have to be a little bit careful with that. I do agree. You need to really get your contract straight when it comes to equity. There's often a lot of lawsuits around equity. So I'd really, you know, encourage anyone considering going down any of these paths to get a good lawyer to help them structure a plan. And there are so many different variations, from phantom options to options, to straight out equity ownership. You know, if you're thinking about doing it, just get good legal advice. Call a company.
I also have used equity in my current company. We brought on a photographer, a graphic designer, our IT department, our social media folks, and our copywriting people, all with equity. They have worked out great. We did find that our company's needs outgrew the skill set of two of those folks, and they still own equity, but they are not involved in the day-to-day. We also had another
person that had equity that became an enormous problem, and we ended up having to buy that equity back. So I would caution people, equity is, we think it's an easy thing to give away, but once you give it away, it's gone. And the equity is a very valuable commodity in your company. So I'd be very, very, very careful to vet the people you're considering giving equity to. Marcia, complete.
Yeah, that's another reason to add on to what Colin was saying. Colin talked about some of the tax considerations with giving equity versus options. But another reason why options may be a more viable solution is because options typically vest over time so that you're protected in a case where if someone leaves the company and they only have options, they only have the options that have vested by the time they leave the company. And then they have to exercise those options to convert them into equity. Versus giving someone equity, and this is a mistake sometimes founders make because, you know, someone could leave the company and they have half the company and they're no longer involved and they're no longer working on the company. So if you structure things with options, you can control how they're actually given, and it's typically vesting over time. So there are controls there. And I'm not a lawyer either, but have been down this road many times with many companies. Thank you. I'm Jeff and I'm complete.
You know, one of the things that I want to point out, whenever you're in any room and you're talking business, if you're hearing anything about accounting or legal contract, yeah, make sure you definitely check it out with the professionals. This is advice, this is some things that, you know, we've gone through, but it's always good to make sure that you do check it out. And that book, by the way, it does go through all of these different scenarios that we've been talking about, but it's called Slicing Pie. And it's by Mike Moyer. You can get it on Amazon or pretty much anywhere. But it's a very short read. It's a great read. So check it out if it's something that you've never thought about. Okay, so before we get any further, I just want to reset the room. Just to let everybody know that this is Ecom Weekly. Learn how to sell online. Today's topic is scaling your business. We are recording the session today. Jeffrey is going to slap me in the back of the head if I don't say this right. If you are not prepared to be recorded, please don't put your hand up. And if you like what you hear, if you like what our panelists are saying, please follow them. If you like the room today and the details, hit the green house up by the Startup Club. All right, so let's get to the next question. Jenny, welcome to the stage.
Sorry, I couldn't work my mic. Thank you so much, Jeffrey. I started my first company, which I'm currently working in. It's an e-commerce business. And like many of you have said, this is the first time that I've ever done this. It's self-funded. I design my own products. And so I've already learned such valuable information from all of you. And I hope one day to I'm just so in awe of all of your successes and how well you have done. I guess the question that I had is, if there's one thing that you could tell someone who is starting their very first business, what would you tell them is, you know, maybe one thing that they need to do or that they need to remember, especially now that you all have went through the phase that I'm in and have found so much success in becoming serial entrepreneurs?
Open to the panel.
I could jump into that. And actually, I'm just paraphrasing what was already mentioned previously. And I honestly can't remember who of the amazing people on the panel here who've answered it. But whenever you're starting something, have your end goal in mind. And especially like with e-com businesses, like back in the dot-com era, you built a dot-com, you sold a website. And a lot of people now are in the whole concept of build an e-com business in order to sell it. And a lot of times people don't even think about what is actually going to happen in year two or year three or year four or whatever that might be. So if you're starting something, have the end goal in mind so that you are building the foundation appropriately and properly and you're getting the right guidance and support in order to be able to accomplish that, even if it could take you 3 years or 5 years or maybe even a year, who the hell knows? But really make sure you are clear on what that end goal is going to be. Are you going to exit and sell the business or not kind of scenario?
I also think that when you're starting a business, I am going to speak from a product business because my life has been creating products. It's very important to have all of your safety testing done, have your ducks in a row. And also, I always put together a pretty complete focus testing and make sure you know what your focus consumers are saying about your product. Listen to them. Listen to the ugly stuff because that's where the real learning will be. Don't just listen to the praise. And then modify your product accordingly before you take it into brick and mortar or e-commerce because the mistakes are far easier and less expensive to correct early on than they are once you've started to scale.
Yeah, on that note, I would like to add too that if you're just getting started, don't treat business like it's a hobby that you are going to be butthurt if you don't succeed in. And what I mean by that is like business, like you're not, ultimately you're in business to make money, right? That is the purpose of business. Now, you know, obviously if you're making money doing something that you really enjoy, it's going to be a lot, you know, better for you than, you know, doing something that you don't enjoy. But I see far too much confirmation bias in aspiring entrepreneurs where they want their idea to be good, that they almost ignore anything that would make them feel like their idea is bad. And you have to do this within boundaries because successful entrepreneurs, you know, we all mentioned it, but there was a lot of talk about, you know, being successful as an entrepreneur requires you to pivot. And, you know, pivoting is different than sticking with a bad idea. Sticking with a bad idea is you're just convinced that your idea is so good that you're just going to keep trying it and you're going to keep doing it the exact same way. And you're not going to change anything that you do. Okay. So I'm not saying that like you need to be stubborn. You need to be, you do need to like stick with things and make sure that you see them through, but you have to be like teachable and, you know, to the point that where Marcia said, you know, you listen to your customers. If your customers are saying something consistently about something that you sell that, you know, is not necessarily easy to hear, you need to make sure that you listen to that, you internalize it, and you figure out how you can then, you know, improve what you're doing so that you actually do a better job of solving people's problems. And so, I know that's kind of long-winded, so I apologize, but I guess for me, it would just be trying to avoid confirmation biases, trying to look for the answers that you want to hear because, you know, you want to feel good. It's better to be realistic and honest if you have something, if you have a dead, you know, one of your products that just, you know, may need to be cut loose and just, you know, it could be a real, like, it could feel like your baby, like you know, you spent so much time on this and you've invested so much money, you don't want it to fail. Well, that's just not any way to really run a business. So I know it's kind of long-winded, but that would be my, I guess that's 5 cents at this point. My name is Paul. I'm done speaking.
That's about a quarter, Paul.
Yeah, about a quarter.
Hey, Jenny, I actually just checked out your website. It's super cute. I'm your target audience, you know, women in their 30s and 40s who like are obsessed with their pets, with their dogs, but also want a beautiful, clean home. I think that what most I would look at for your website is just expand out your story of really make it relating and connecting to you because I think a lot of people don't realize that one of the most visited pages on any website is the About Us story. And I don't really see your story of making it super hyper personalized. And maybe that's in your extended emails. Maybe that's in your social media. But I'm missing it on your website. And I can just tell you have a great story behind this, especially because I saw that you were featured on Oprah. So I feel like just getting more of like why this is important and creating sort of a communal sense of like you're part of our tribe, you're part of the cool chicks who have great dogs, who have beautiful homes and want to keep them that way, type of a tribal feel. The only other thing that I saw, because I actually am looking for an ottoman for my dog right now because he's 8 to get up on the bed, is maybe having more styles because that's very particular to one particular style of home and it's different than my style of home. Otherwise, I would have purchased an ottoman right then. But super cute product. Keep going the way that you're going, and I can totally see that it's building, but it just needs a little bit more of like, I want to know a little bit more about you and get that feeling throughout the whole website. But your product photography is great and your products are gorgeous. And that's all I have.
Andrea, you have a site and an organization for women entrepreneurs, Power Chick Mafia. Is that correct?
I do. Yes. So check out the Power Chick Mafia for sure. It's powerchickmafia.com. And it's just a bunch of rad, badass women who've all started companies that are valued, you know, at least over the 10 to 20 million mark. And then we have several women who've started billion-dollar companies. So yes, I would love to connect with all the cool women on the call. So check out Power Chick Mafia today.
All right. I've got a 2 cents to that question as well from Jenny. One of the things that I've experienced, Colin's off the call, but he knows me very well. You gotta be resilient. If you're going to be a serial entrepreneur, or if you just want to be an entrepreneur, the one thing that's going to happen is you are going to get kicked between the legs. And it's going to happen every 3 months or so. They say every 3 months. You got to learn to get up and attack it again. Get up. And it, you know what? It actually gets easier. Every time something bad happens that you think you can't survive, and I'm talking about losing a home, or things like that. Or it could be something minor. It could be, you know, something you could get done fairly quickly. But things happen in business. And it's never as bad as you think. That is probably my biggest thing I can tell you if you want to be an entrepreneur. The other thing is become an expert. You don't have to become an expert in everything. But make sure that you're doing training. Make sure you provide training, the proper training to your staff. Let them become the experts. And, you know, by doing that, like I know when in our operation, everybody in the operation that I have is working or trying to become an expert in whatever they want to. If it's social media, if it's content writing, if it's whatever, we pay for it. We want to make sure that people get the right information. And we have a sheet that people fill out. The end of the week, Friday, whoever the sales or the senior project manager would be, they would receive the 5 top things, 5 strengths, the 5 weaknesses of the week, and then what you trained over the week and how you think it could apply to the company. And that happens on a weekly basis every Friday. So that's just my 2 cents on, you know, adding to what everybody else said.
Thank you so much, everyone. I truly value your opinion, and I definitely agree. Early on, I learned that regardless of what happens, you have to take a step forward. And so I appreciate you and Andrea. I'm going to look into your group. So thank you, everyone.
Okay. Now, let me see if my glasses are... I'm an old guy. Okay. Vashika, how are you? Welcome to the stage. What's your question?
Thank you so much. And thank you for welcoming me to the group. So as we all know that the digital space is growing it's growing on a very rapid stage. And when we talk about competition, I mean, there is a lot of competition in the market. I mean, there are multiple e-com websites available. And personally, I have a jewelry brand and I make handmade gemstone jewelry. So my question was actually, Norman, you said it once when we were there in the panel, that packaging plays a very important role. And I wanted to shift from my old packaging to new packaging because I want to go into something more luxurious. But again, that's the thing, that since I'm a startup and packaging involves a huge cost, and at the end of the day, it is the customer who needs to pay for that packaging. So I had this question from everybody, is it the right time for a startup to invest in a luxurious packaging, or whether they should be, you know, since they are on an initial stage, so they should just stay on the basic packaging for now, and then maybe when they grow, they should move more towards the luxurious packaging. So thank you so much.
Brenda, you've got the most gorgeous packaging with your product.
Thank you. Yes, I love packaging. And, you know, this is a tough question because, again, you have to know your customer. And if you're going towards the masses and you have a lower price product, is really hitting your margins when you add packaging.
but this is how you can go about it. Whatever that price point is for your product already, you can go about it in, okay, let's just say if your customer gets buys multiple different products, so like depending on the average order value, if it's X amount, they get a free velvet little bag, traveling bag. So add value with your packaging that they will reuse. And then if they're going to end up paying for it, then you can have a little like postcard that says, hey, for your next purchase, you get a percentage off. So there's different ways to go about it. And even in that little postcard, you can have your, I like how Andrea said about your about me. So you add more sentiment towards that opening unboxing experience. I would go about it in the most, you have to be really careful when you get into packaging, especially at the beginning. So I would do little steps at a time and then start analyzing what's working. So are more people buying a bigger order value? And then you start adding more packaging to it. But there's different ways to add value to it. So think about how can I add value that people are going to keep this packaging and not just throw it away. Think about how Apple does their packaging. We all have that little box in our kitchen that has all the products of Apple, the boxes, because it's just so nice. But also think about your customer as a whole. Is it the jewelry? It's in the bedroom, right? So think about a little jewelry box that comes with your third purchase or whatever that is, that your brand will always stick with them. And they have a friend come over, they see the really cute jewelry box, and they're like, oh, where'd you get that? That's really cute. Oh, it's this. So like, think about that brand awareness that will go for the long term.
I would like to jump in. Oh, sorry.
You go, Ashley. I'll go after you.
I would actually just love to know, what is your current packaging? Because I am a jewelry freak. That is the one thing that I collect like crazy. And my husband absolutely hates it because he can never buy me a gift because he never knows what I want. And so I have like boxes of jewelry. And so I'm really conscious of how the jewelry does show up, whether I'm buying it online or if I'm walking into a store and how they're handing it to me. And then the reusability of what I'm getting as well. So can you dive into like, are they just getting the item and like a little plastic bag, a little zippy, and like a little, you know, string bag that is see-through? What does that look like right now?
Okay, so currently my box is a small cardboard box with a small small velvet pouch inside it. It's a good packaging, but I wanted to shift to a more luxurious one with the heavy boxes, with a satin cloth inside and then a velvet pouch. But I forgot to add this before. Since we're talking about e-com, the most difficult thing which I face at the moment is the shipping cost. So as you go towards the more luxurious packaging, the weight of the product increases, and so you need to pay extra for the shipping. So again, this was the second question I had while thinking about packaging.
Right. And what is the price point of your jewelry? Like, is it handcrafted jewelry? Because I used to be a jewelry designer as well, actually. So is it gold? Is it silver? Is it real stones? Is it crystals? What does that look like?
So my jewelry is 9-to-5 sterling silver, and they are studded with semi-precious gemstones. So obviously, I won't say it's cheap, or I won't say it's too much of high value. It's of mediocre cost. So maybe you can say $40 to $50 for a single ring, maybe, yeah.
Awesome. You know, I love what Brenda was saying, you know, previously when it comes to starting out small and incremental. And if you walk into my room, I have a crap ton of boxes. I mean, like they're piled up, and I don't actually keep any of my boxes. What I do keep in was what you already provide, which is a little velvet pack pocket, but like, I don't know if it's a button or something along the lines, or a zipper. Those types of things I do keep for travel sake, especially if I'm, you know, going on the plane or whatnot. But if you're talking about sterling silver, one thing that I wish came more often was a polishing cloth, to be quite honest with you, because silver, obviously, you know, it loses its shine quite quickly compared to obviously something as gold. But I would incrementally work your way up, like Brenda was talking about. Ask the people who are already buying right now if they're even using it, because 9 times out of 10, the boxes get thrown out. It's a beautiful aspect to it, but really, at the end of the day, if you just wrap it up in like tissue paper with a really beautiful sticker on it, that adds just to that like extra layer of opening, that it doesn't add to the weight of the of the package, but it just creates a little bit more of like, yeah, I'm opening up a present. Like for me, as someone who buys jewelry religiously, that's something that hits home for me rather than the actual box itself having like a satin liner. I don't give a crap about that, but that's just me personally. I'm Ashley and I'm done.
And I'd love to add in my thoughts on this, and they kind of more pertain to branding specifically. Packaging is an extension of your brand. And so think of it as that. It's another way that you communicate your brand, your value proposition, the things that you value as a company. If there's any causes that you believe in, it's that, that about us sort of sentiment. Packaging is an extension of your brand. So you need to think of it in that regard too, when people are opening it, what is the impression that you're trying to leave people with? Branding in its basic form is leaving a mark on someone. And, we have brands, Apple, Tiffany's, Coach, whatever, right? When I say those names, images and thoughts come to mind about those brands.